This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley and today we're talking again about men's grief in TFMR. Joining me is another panel of guests, but before I introduce our dads who are here with us, I just want to welcome my co-host, Nick Embleton. Nick is a consultant neonatologist in Newcastle, and he'll tell us a little bit more about himself in a moment, but let me introduce our dads. So welcome to Avi, he's joining us from Western Canada, and Jack from here in the UK. For context, they both have experienced TFMR due to their partner's maternal health. So thank you both for being here with us today. And Nick, I'll just hand it over to you. And would you mind telling the listeners a little bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, thanks, Hayley. And hi, Jack and Avi, and thanks for taking part. I'm a consultant neonatologist. So I work on a large neonatal unit in the north of England. So I've done that for about 20 years now. And as part of my job, I do speak with lots of couples in fetal medicine clinics. If abnormalities, for example, have been seen on antenatal scans and where a decision for TFMR might be appropriate. So that's my kind of professional experience of TFMR. And then on the neonatal unit where I work, I obviously interact with lots of parents who are obviously often very stressed and anxious and dealing with babies who might be very sick. And so I have obviously been involved in supporting and speaking to parents on a neonatal unit about, you know, the appropriateness of continuing active intensive care. So that's my area of work, really. That's where I come into it. So yeah, thanks for inviting me, Hayley.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Nick. So we're going to jump right into it. And I'd like to start with you, Avi. And I wondered if you could tell us about, you know, that time when you found out that something was wrong with your partner, what was going on for her and how that impacted you.
Yeah, so we had a termination for medical reasons at 17 weeks with our son. We had unexplained bleeding for a few weeks. And then I remember it was a Wednesday that the OB called, or our midwives called, and said, we need to have a meeting on Friday. They told us to my partner, Georgia, and they said, can your husband be there as well? And that kind of sent up some red flags. And I was on the optimistic side and Georgia was not. And so we went into this meeting and they told us that it was no longer safe to continue. So we both found out at the same time. And I think Georgia had kind of prepped herself going into it a little more than I had. And it was, I remember just an overwhelming feeling. And we both broke down, obviously. And it didn't feel like it was, they kept saying the word choice, but it wasn't a choice because of the baby's position where he was in Georgia's uterus. He was stuck and her uterus was expanding just on one side and it was about to rupture any day. So it was not safe for her at all. And that was the hardest part with the healthy baby to make that quote unquote decision, which wasn't a decision.
Mm. Yeah. And you said there, Avi, that Georgia was prepared in some way.
I think somewhat prepared. She had, in her mind, she had gone down that path of worst case scenario. I don't even think that she even got to that point. So it was quite a big, it was a gut punch for sure. It was not easy.
And do you remember, because I remember we interviewed Georgia for the maternal health episode that we did. And,
yes,
you know, this what was happening for her, the level of danger was high.
It was imminent. So I think best case scenario, she would have made it to 21 weeks. And knowing that, given that the baby wouldn't have survived, and she probably, there was a high chance that she wasn't going to survive, and at the least probably not have a uterus anymore. It was going to rupture. I think by the time that we had the termination a few days later, and they came to the conclusion that her uterus was less than a hair thin.
And what was it like for you to kind of, when you were with her? I mean, I can just, I'm sort of feeling like this tender hooks, you know, just kind of like watching her like a hawk. I don't know. What was your sort of...
We were just hyper aware of everything. I was, because obviously it's her body. I was so curious what was going on. What was she feeling? What's happening? Any changes? What's changing now? What's going on now? I felt like I was almost pestering her with questions and trying not to. And it was really hard. Because I had no idea what was going on for her, you know, physically or emotionally. As much as you can try to be there and try to empathize, as men, we'll never know any of that. It's impossible. So I was trying to be as connected to her as possible when I could, without bombarding her with questions, which also felt it was going to make it worse or something.
It sounds like you felt it was a bit intrusive in some way.
A little bit. I didn't want to be intrusive. I didn't want to put that on her as well. You know, she's going through all these emotions, and I didn't want her to have to, you know, explain it explicitly to me as well. I felt almost cruel to her. Like trying to make her relive it over and over.
Yeah. Or her worrying about how you were feeling about all of this.
That too, I was trying to be strong, I think, which not always the best situation, because, you know, there's comfort in sadness and crying together. And we found a lot of that. That was actually really helpful, contrary to what I've always thought. Crying together was really bonding. And it was really hard because we had a 3-year-old as well at the time, who had no idea what was going on. But, you know, why are mommy and daddy sad, or what's going on?
Yeah, so there's high stakes here. There's a lot of people to look after and protect.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, Jack, I can see you. I've noticed you sort of nodding at different points as Avi's told his story.
Yeah, quite interesting that I would say our experience, mine and my wife's, is a little bit different in terms of the story and the process that we went through. So ours was quite an early pregnancy TFMR experience. So for a bit of context, my wife, since birth, has had a hole in the heart and complete congenital heart block. So she's had a pacemaker since she was 1 week old. And we were told that being pregnant is absolutely fine. You know, there's things that we need to look at when she is pregnant, you know, due to the nature of the complications in her heart that she's already got. And then we weren't even together when we found out the news. Megan was by herself at the hospital. So she was at a regular pacemaker checkup just to check the battery life of her pacemaker, make sure everything's okay. And Megan dropped into the conversation that we are pregnant. And at the time it was about 5 weeks. I was at work. Megan's had a pacemaker her whole life. So a regular pacemaker checkup is pretty much routine for Megan. It's nothing out of the ordinary at all. So she usually goes to them by herself. That's not an issue. So we're absolutely fine with that. And they did an echo of her heart just to kind of track progress of how she is and how she will be throughout the pregnancy. And after the echo, they found out that her aorta, they said that it's supposed to be 26 millimeters in diameter, and they did Megan's echo and it was 48 millimeters in diameter. And they basically turned around to Megan and said, you know, you're either going to have to keep the pregnancy and risk fatality, or it will be a fatality for her in the third trimester due to the blood pressure. And, you know, on the aorta, with it being so large, and I was in Manchester, not close at work to her. I work in the education sector, so I was actually teaching primary school children. And I had a member of SLT at the school come into the lesson and tell me that my wife's distressed, I need to phone her. As soon as she said that, and I knew that she was at the pacemaker clinic, you know, speaking to the doctor, telling them that she's pregnant, I instantly thought something's not right here. And it wasn't pacemaker related. So then I had to drive over to the hospital, knowing that I'm going to get there and it's not going to be good news, basically. So it was a very brief phone call with my wife. She was obviously very distressed, and the worst thing was that she was by herself, which made me feel extremely guilty. But we didn't think for one, not even one part of us thought that there would be a complication at that time, or that it was necessary for me to be there when we told them about the pregnancy, because it was a standard checkup for her pacemaker. So I spent a good hour and a half by myself, thinking in my car on the way there, thinking I need to make sure that I'm composed when I get there and I know what I'm doing. And in all honesty, I had no idea what I was going to do. I was completely winging it. And because it was quite early in the pregnancy, so at the time of that, she was 6 weeks pregnant. We'd not actually told family. So on the way to the hospital, I had to make a phone call to my parents to tell them that, yes, we're pregnant, but I'm on the way to the hospital because we need to have a discussion about terminating it, which was extremely hard to tell them in the first place we're pregnant, but then in the same breath, tell them that it's we're going to have to terminate the pregnancy, unfortunately.
It's a lot there.
Yeah,
And it's a
sorry.
lot. No,
Yeah.
that's okay. But what I'm picking up both from Avi and from you is there's this, and I've heard it from the other dads as well, haven't we, Nick? Where, there's this sense of I have to hold this together somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the kind of stereotypical roles are a bit different. Abby, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, things are, your world's falling apart all around you, and at least you want to give your wife some sort of stability, your partner some sort of stability and safety to let her go through the process, which I also realize is also a little isolating because, you want to go through that with your partner. You want to feel that them being there. So, it's kind of, it's contrary in men's head, I think.
Yeah, I think you've hit on the what happens is this sort of, no, I want to be the solid one so that she can completely just do what she needs to do. I'm going to hold it all together. And what Abby, you had said earlier about actually, but being together and sharing it, crying together, grieving together was bonding.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I think on that as well, I think that's the big difference between how, well, for me anyway, that's how I've grieved in difference to Megan. So, for example, I feel like Megan's grieving compared to myself was quite physical in terms of even at the minute, it's just over a year gone since the termination. If she's had a bad day at work, she'll make a comment of, I should be on maternity leave right now, looking after a little baby, which obviously she's not doing. And then I think for me, it took about 6 months for me to actually go through that process. We were actually sat down watching a TV show, and the TV show is about two mums who adopt children. And then a certain scene happened, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So the termination was in July. We were watching that in February. I remember it quite well. And it wasn't until then that I actually probably processed what had gone on. And I think that was because I was trying to be that barrier for my wife and protect her. And for me, knowing that if that pregnancy had continued to the third trimester, she would have died effectively. That as long as she's okay, then I'm okay. And I wasn't too concerned about myself. My way of dealing with the first 6 months was I need to keep busy. I need to do everything I possibly can to make sure that I don't sit down and think about it for a minute, which I think in the long run hasn't helped because I haven't sat down to think about it. And I think it's only recently that I've actually started to truly grieve, even a year later. And I listened to the other podcast that you did with the fathers, and they seem to go through the exact same process. They grieved much later on after the termination. I think that's because they were probably doing something, similar to myself of being there for their partner because it's, their physical health as well for the immediate turn anyway. And then obviously you've got to think about your mental well-being and mental health in terms of dealing with it. And that's when it just all came down on me. And I wish I'd have spoken to her about it more, but couldn't help but just want to be there to make sure that she's okay because that was the number one priority for us.
Do you feel anybody apart from your partner was thinking about your mental health? I mean, the focus is often on women in this immediate period. I mean, do you feel that you were ignored or sidelined?
Yeah, I mean, I know when we set or when you set this podcast up, Hayley, and you reached out and I said, I feel really lonely and isolated. And that's when you kind of got me and Avi in touch. And me and Avi have had several Zoom calls and, you know, calls
Brilliant.
before this podcast. So we know we already know each other quite well.
Oh, that's lovely.
Before this podcast, which is really nice. And
that's
in a way,
very
I think,
nice, yeah.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. And I think in a way, this before we've even recorded this podcast, it's brought us closer together. And I think I've probably had conversations with Avi that I wouldn't have had with people that I've known my entire life due to the nature and safety that we've got with each other.
I find there's a special bond with when you talk to other fathers that have gone through similar processes or similar procedures and situations. It's a unique bond that, you know, you wouldn't have, as Jack said, with people you've known your whole life.
I mean, it's a shared trauma that you've both been through. Yeah. So there's certain things you don't have to go through explaining in certain ways or detail. There'll be a shared understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely. But in terms of the conversations around the termination, a lot of it, I felt that everyone was kind of asking my wife how she is, like at the workplace. I've got a lot of males who I work with because we were sports coaches and, you know, we don't really have those conversations at work, whereas Megan does. And people would ask Megan how she is about the termination and, you know, what we're going through. And I'd be there and I'm like, I'm here too. You know, I've gone through it too. You know, not that I'm crying out for sympathy or want to, you know, shed tears about what we're doing, but I feel like, you know, it's our pregnancy, it was our baby, you know, it's something I'm trying to deal with as well. And in that respect, I did feel isolated. But then it also very much felt like an elephant in the room in terms of people just had no idea what to say to us and how to speak to us about the whole thing.
But were you able to tell people at work what had happened? Because I guess this all happened very quickly before anybody at work knew that you were pregnant.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in a fortunate position that my boss, my manager at work, I'm quite close with him. And my wife, when she was at the hospital by herself, she tried to contact me, but I was teaching, so she wasn't able to. So she rang my boss to try and get in touch with me because she needed to speak to me. So he knew already about it. And then I've kind of just kept it quite close. Not many people at work know about it. And I think that's on a need-to-know basis at work, but then also because we're quite a young workforce as well, I'm not sure if they would know how to speak to me about it. And with my role at work, I don't want to put them in that uncomfortable position. But then I also feel guilty of not acknowledging the termination, which I know is similar to a previous conversation that you had on the other podcast, that they felt almost guilty about not addressing it when someone's asked how they are and things. Mm. And I do feel like that. But then I know that it's not a nice topic to talk about if someone asks how I am or wants to speak about it. You know, it isn't pleasant and it's not nice. And I think it's probably easier for me to talk about it to Avi, for example, because I know that he's been through it. Whereas somebody that hasn't might look at me completely blankly and not know what to say. And we felt like that with family as well, that sometimes, you know, and don't get me wrong, close family have been really, really supportive and they've been absolutely saviors in terms of helping and supporting me and Megan. But in terms of just speaking about it generally, I think it's one of those of we don't know what to say, so we won't say anything. And at first we would have been upset about discussing it. You know, it's very raw, very new to us. You know, we're not fortunate to have any other children and we at the minute we can't do. But it was just an elephant in the room that wasn't addressed.
Do you feel people, or did anybody downplay it? Were people saying, this is just a 5-week pregnancy, like, you know?
That never happened. We're very fortunate that they treated it as if, you know, regardless of how pregnant we were, that it was very serious because we were also kind of worried about how people would feel in terms of, for all we know, this baby and this pregnancy would have been completely healthy. You know, it was Megan's health that was at risk. The baby could have been completely healthy. We have no idea. So then we also felt like, you know, there's a big difference of opinion in regards to termination. And even though the hospital gave us the choice of carrying on the pregnancy or not, it clearly wasn't an option, knowing that there's going to be a fatality for my wife in the third trimester. You know, that's not an option.
Yeah, I'm wondering about this choice. Avi, you talked about this as well. And it sounds like neither of you, the hospital's offering a choice, but.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a choice. And I remember at one point, Georgia thinking, okay, well, is there anything we can do? Can we make it to 28? Can we make it to 30? Can we make it to baby has a fighting chance and just deliver as early as possible? But that wasn't an option for us, unfortunately. And we did know that he was a healthy baby, which was really difficult because our first child, she has one kidney. So we were closely followed by our maternal fetal medicine. We were in the hospital all the time with her, and this one was completely healthy. So, you know, it was a different pregnancy. It was somewhat routine and normal up till the bleeding started. So it wasn't really routine, actually. So. But the baby was healthy, and the hard part was not having the choice, even though they kept using the word.
Yeah, so I'm curious about this because both you and Jack, you know, would the medics, and Nick, you might be able to help with this as well, like, would the medics ever sort of go, yeah, okay, then, if you want to carry on with this pregnancy, okay, we'll do the best we can for you?
Yeah, I think in our situation, there was a few OBs involved and some at some of the universities locally as well. I think there was four or five OBs that had been consulted, and they all said, no. One said, how is this woman still pregnant?
Right.
Yeah. So there was no going forward with it.
Yeah. So it's interesting because they're sort of presenting it as a choice, but it's not really.
Yeah. I think maybe, you know, medical liability or something, they can't force you to do something.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Nick, I can see thinking this
maybe
through, aren't
Nick
you?
Nick can answer that better than I can.
Now yeah. I'm thinking it through. I mean, of course, you can't impose a medical procedure or an intervention on somebody who has capacity. So I could imagine that there might be people with particularly strong religious convictions who would have just accepted that one outcome here is maternal death. So it is sort of a choice. Although, you know, for most people, I can see that it isn't presented like that. I mean, obviously, you know, our job as health professionals is to try and involve parents in shared decision making. You know, we want this to feel like this is a decision shared by everybody involved, and that not one single person needs to feel that they have to make that decision, that we try and make these decisions together to some extent. But, you know, we go through the same sort of procedure, perhaps, when we're asking parents for consent to do something to a baby. And we want, you know, a baby needs an operation. We say, well, you know, this is what the operation's for, and please sign this consent form to show that you agree with the choice. But actually, what if you didn't sign the consent form? I'm going to do it anyhow, because I have the baby's best interest. So, you know, I think we're trying to show that we're making shared decisions here rather than saying there's a kind of choice between this option and the other option. I think it's kind of confirming that you agree with the medical standpoint.
Yeah, it's not so black and white. It's not this choice or this choice. There's and I can see that it's the kind of future. So when you as parents, Jack and Avi, you and your partner's wives are sitting down and processing this months later, years later, that you can kind of go back and go, you know, this is what we were presented with. This was what the medics told us about what was going on. And that, you know, these were the likely outcomes if we proceeded with this pregnancy. It's kind of being able to make sense, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think kind of continuing from what you've said, Nick, we've literally last week had a hospital appointment with the lead cardiologist at that hospital, because we've got to make sure that Megan's aorta is okay, because it's obviously almost double in size. It's 48 millimeters. And he's kind of given us two different pathways of whether we go down the route of making sure the aorta is okay, because at the minute we're looking at IVF and surrogacy. But then we've gone to the lead cardiologist, and he's kind of said, if this aorta gets any bigger, we are going to have to replace that aorta and have open heart surgery to fix it. He said, it's not going to get any smaller. It's only going to get bigger. And if you do replace it, you know, he said, I feel strong enough that you would be able to carry a baby and it would be safe. And that the aorta is the problem. And we had gene tests as well to work out why the aorta has expanded the way it has, because it's never come up on previous echoes of Megan's heart. We don't know. He said we don't know, and we're probably never going to know why the aorta has expanded, which is hard for us because that's the reason why. We know that it's not the pacemaker, it's not the hole in the heart that she's got, and the complete congenital heart block. It's this aorta, and we're never going to have closure on that. So that's one of the hardest things at the minute that we've had to face. But he's kind of said it's not going to get smaller. You're only going to get older. Your body's only going to struggle further down the line to cope with this procedure that you're likely going to need to have at some point in your life. You're better off having it sooner rather than later. But he never said, you know, his words weren't, "Are you going to have this open heart surgery? Are you going to have this aorta replaced?" It was kind of, "Well, these are the facts and the figures that I'm presenting to you. Now it's you need to make that choice of what you want to do, and we're going to support you and work out what's best for you."
And I mean, this is what we look to for our doctors, right? Is this is their expertise and what they've trained in and what we need them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like it's almost, I almost try and compare it to like a car MOT. If the garage tells me I've had an MOT and my car needs X, Y, and Z replacing to pass, you get it done. They're the specialist, they're the expert.
You trust them.
Well, you have to. But I think what it, when we're talking about something like TFMR and TFMR for maternal health, I think what you guys are sort of touching on is how, you know, your trust in the world is really shaken, you know, and it, you're both sort of like, Nick's
Very
not.
much so.
It's, and it's really unnerving. We've sort of gone through life and encountering things, but this is like nothing else.
Absolutely.
It's indescribable.
I think that's what brought us together as well. That brought me and my wife closer in terms of if we can experience this, you know, come out of the other side of it, then what can't we do?
Oh, we were the same. You have to.
Have you, Abby, have you spoken to your son at all about this now? I mean, does he know that there was another baby in the family?
So our daughter, we have two
Daughter,
daughters now,
sorry,
actually. So we've had a healthy pregnancy since.
yeah.
But yeah, she was very, we didn't hide anything from her because she obviously knew mama was pregnant and she was very excited. And she still, you know, when she's in the middle of a temper tantrum or a meltdown now, she ends it off by saying, "I miss my brother." It always turns into that. But so she's very aware, and we have a little stuffy with his name on it for her. So, you know, it wasn't a secret for her. We talked about it very openly, and still do. And I think that has been very healthy for all of us, especially her, because, you know, a 3.5-year-old trying to grieve this is difficult. It's different than me trying to grieve it, than Georgia trying to grieve it, you know. So we got three different griefs to work with.
Were you worried about telling her?
I don't think we ever thought about it. So George is a counselor, so she's very aware of emotions and trauma and that sort of thing. So I think for I let her take lead on that of how to talk with our daughter about it. And I don't think we ever, it was almost immediate that we told her really. We found out on a Friday, we had to terminate on the Tuesday. We completed the termination. I think we told her on the Tuesday or Wednesday what had happened. And it wasn't it was kind of ripped the band-aid off situation. And it was tough. It was hard to tell her and to see her go through, you know, processing it and understanding what had happened. And, you know, there's not going to be a baby coming out in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar situation. So Benjamin, my son, who's now 9, he was 2.5 at the time. And I figured out why they don't like you to bring kids to ultrasounds, but it just happened that way. He was in hospital for his own. He had a chest infection, and it just happened to be the same weekend that I was having my 12-week scan. So he was there. He was discharged, and we went down to maternity to have the scan. And we're all sat in this cramped room, and then the sonographer says, well, she goes very quiet, which I was already aware that something was up. And then she said, "There's I'm seeing some a problem here or something not right." And then all hell broke loose, and Benjamin's screaming, and I'm crying, and
Oh
Charlie,
no.
my husband's crying. And they I get them out of the room, and I speak with the sonographer, find out a bit more. And then we go to the screening midwife to have some blood drawn. And sort of things, we're all then, all the three of us are then together. And then we leave the hospital together. And Benjamin's just like, what the hell just happened there? I mean, in a 2.5-year-old's mind, you know, what the hell has just happened there? And I remember sitting in the car, him in the back seat, and me going, there's something wrong with the baby in mummy's tummy. It's not very well. We don't know what's happening. We'll find out more in a few days, but right now it doesn't look like the baby's very well. And yeah, everybody's, I'm sad, daddy's sad. Yeah, we'll tell you more once we know more, you know. And I think you're right. And then this process of, you know, the grieving, and his grief has changed so much over the years. And I very much took a bit like you, Avi. I was like, I'm not even going to think about this. Like, I'm just telling him what's happening. And I sort of took the route of, he'll let me know what he needs to know, in a way, like what questions he asks, that will be what he needs. And I learned very quickly on not to say more than what he was actually asking. So just give him, just answer the question as clearly and as truthfully as I possibly could. And if that meant I didn't know the answer, I told him that. I would say I didn't know, but I would try to find out, you know. And let him guide what he needed from me. And it's not been easy. I think anybody listening to this, it's definitely not an easy route for probably things you might not realize until you're in it and they're asking you these questions. You're like, oh my God, how can I answer this question?
Yeah. And it's a never ending whys.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to explain because we don't have answers.
Well, that's it. And that's why there'd be times where I just had to say, I honestly don't know. And I think, you know, kids just look at us as parents and go, but you will know because you're my parents. So you know the answers. You're basically gods, you know, it's the kind of thing. So for you to turn around and say, I don't know, there's another level of vulnerability there. And a vulnerability for them that then needs to kind of be worked through.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Mm. Yeah, really hard. Did you and Georgia, did you tell your daughter that mummy's health was at risk? Like, how did you?
Yes. Yes.
You did. Okay.
I remember we did. This was about a year and a half ago now, so I don't remember all the details of what we told her about what was going on. But we did talk to her about, it's not safe for mama. If we continue, you know, there's a lot of risk to her.
Yeah. And you said that you've had another baby since.
Yeah, so we've had a healthy baby. She's 4 months old. And actually, Nick, she's got a CPAM. So we're about to have that conversation with the surgeon next week or this week about surgery. And, you know, do we consent? Do we not consent? But she's totally healthy other than that.
Yeah.
And so it's been great. And, you know, having the two girls is really fun. Louise is a great big sister.
Can you say what a CPAM is, Avi?
Sorry, it's a non-functioning tissue in the lung.
Okay.
So it can cause breathing issues later on in life. And the best course of action is to remove it. But then it's also you doing surgery on a six-month-old, which is not ideal for parents or kids, but mostly really difficult on the parents. But, you know, Louise still, our eldest, still asks about our son quite often.
Was she worried about George's health in the third pregnancy?
No. No, she was very loving and very caring, but she wasn't worried about her health.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
I just want to ask Jack about Megan and how does it make you feel knowing that your wife might put herself through a procedure, thinking that this might then be a route to potentially having a baby in the future? So, I mean, this is a decision for her about her body, but she's perhaps considering that decision because the two of you want a baby. How do you kind of feel about her putting herself through something, maybe partly for you?
Yeah. To be honest, because it's only been a week ago, and we've, for the past 6 months, we've been we can't get pregnant. It's not happening. IVF and
Yeah.
surrogacy is the way we're going to go. So in the past week where we found out this, you know, could lead to Megan being pregnant, it's been a lot to take on, especially
Yeah,
when we thought it was an avenue that we would never, ever explore. You know, and I try and make light of conversation. That's kind of my defense mechanism. You know, when the lead cardiologist was like, just to confirm, you are using contraception, aren't you? You know, you really can't get pregnant right now. And I just said to him, you know, we are on strict handholding. It's not happening. You're absolutely fine. You know, it's to then find out that that could happen. For me right now, only a week later knowing, I know that it's for Megan's health that this needs to happen, because at some point in Megan's life, she will probably be told that she needs her aorta replacing. Now, we haven't necessarily thought it needs replacing for Megan to be pregnant. It might just be for her health in general rather than anything else at the minute, because we even told him about IVF and surrogacy, and he said, well, for IVF to, you know, take the medicine that you need to take to, you know, stimulate your body and, you know, harvest the eggs, he said that he'd need to speak to the fertility clinic to see if that would overstimulate her body, and then she'd need the aorta replacing anyway. So he said, it's going to be a conversation we need to have, so we might as well have it now. So at the minute, we're kind of thinking we probably should do it. Megan's only getting older. You know, we are both 28 years old. You know, it's not like we're really
You're a
old
baby.
and it's detrimental. Yeah, you know, it's not detrimental, which has been another hard thing. We're at an age where everybody on social media that are our friends are announcing babies and pregnancies, and it's
easy for
you
them.
Know, yeah, exactly. It's like, why not us? Like, we, you know, during after the termination, sorry, we went to the zoo and we're like, why has that ugly little rat got a baby? And we don't, you know. But in terms of Megan being pregnant, we've not really considered that yet. And we're just kind of getting to grips with the whole big procedure. And, you know, he said the aorta replacement is a big deal in terms of Megan's body dealing with it, but it's not for the surgeons and it's fairly routine. But for us and our lives, it is a big deal. So we need to wait and see what happens with that, really. He said that he doesn't want to see us for another year. So, you know, if he's happy to not see Megan for another year, he's the expert. So if he's not in a rush, then neither am I.
Do you find social media triggering? I mean, like, all of us use social media to various extents, and you can't know what's going to come up next on that scroll. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. Me and my wife would be sat in the room, you know, me and Megan would be sat scrolling, and I'd look over and I'd see Megan upset, and I'd know exactly what she's just scrolled to. She's scrolled to a social media post of her friend who's just announced a pregnancy or a gender reveal or a birth. In terms of myself, when I was grieving, my cousin, who's my best friend, had a 6-month-old, and I very much, and I'm well aware that I did it, I distanced myself from
him. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, me and Megan were nothing but excited for him and his partner, but I was jealous almost, and I didn't want to think of myself as jealous, and I'm not a jealous person at all. However, it was really hard not to be, and it wasn't, you know, there was no hate in that jealousy whatsoever.
No,
it was
no.
just like, that could have been me, that should be me, but it's not. So I found that bit really hard.
The question always comes up, why them? Why not us?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Why did they have it so easy?
Yeah, because there's a lot of hurt and trauma and pain and sadness underneath that jealousy and envy, isn't there? It's, you know, I want that too. You know, this is what we want as a couple. This is what we want as a family. Yeah, it's a really painful thing to see somebody else have it and it be seemingly so easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it's thrown in your face as soon as you open your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over and over. I know Georgia deletes Instagram all the time, especially after the termination. We both kind of were off it for quite a while.
Well, you just never know what's going to come next, do you? I mean, it's just it's a kind of nightmare, isn't it? Waiting to happen, almost like the next scroll.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, I wanted to, you know, we've recorded quite a bit now, and I feel like we could keep on going, but I thought I'd sort of end on this kind of note, because you mentioned how you connected, you know, a few months ago now, before we recorded this. So, and I guess I just wanted to hear a little bit about that, and maybe maybe what you'd advise other dads around connecting?
For me, in terms of connecting, so because obviously when you emailed back about the podcast, I just at that moment felt isolated and needed to reach out to somebody else that had experienced it, because I felt like nobody else had been through this. I thought, I can't be the only person on the planet who's a father that's gone through this. There's got to be someone else. And every Google search, nothing was coming. I just couldn't find it. And this for me was a way to connect to someone that knew exactly what I was going through. You know, it might be for different medical reasons. However, we can grieve in the same way. We're still, you know, we've got a partner to look after, and, you know, there's a child that's being considered in there as well. Mm-hmm. It also helps if you've got similar time zones, speaking to someone, you know, half 4 in the afternoon on a Sunday, we're on Zoom and it's, you know, just the morning for Avi. Yeah. But I think it's just a case of getting the courage, because it is a big deal to kind of say, look, this is what I'm going through. I need help and support with this situation. But then you've got to be vulnerable and accept that you want to speak to someone. Or that's how I very much felt, like, you know, reaching out to yourself, Hayley, and then being able to speak to Avi. It was very much putting all my cards on the table.
It was very courageous.
Yeah,
courageous to come and do this and to talk to each other.
It is only type, like, when I send an email, I'm just, you know, almost a keyboard warrior saying, yes, I'll do this. I'll do the podcast. Yes, can I speak to Avi? Yeah. And then I'm thinking,
shit,
I've got to actually do it. I've got to reach out. I've got to reach out to Avi. And I think because I grieved so late on as well, I felt like doing this would help me in terms of processing everything that's gone on.
And has it? It sounds like it has helped you.
Yeah, very much so. You know, especially listening to, you know, the other podcasts, especially the father's podcast, because I feel like I can see their perspective much clearer. Mm-hmm. You know, and seeing other things like Tommy's, who I am running the London Marathon for next year as part of me trying to keep occupied. So that's what I'm currently doing in my spare time leading up to April next year. But you know, if anyone wants to join me and Avi on a Sunday at 4:30 in the afternoon, 4:30 UK time, you know, we're more than welcome to have anyone else join us.
Oh, that's
you know, and we don't necessarily talk about, you know, the termination and how we're dealing with things. We just have a general chat. You know, it tends to be cars and golf, to be honest.
Yeah. Great.
So, it's been really nice. And I know when you set this up a few months ago, I think I wrote a handful of emails reaching out to Jack and then deleted them. I was like, I don't know about this. And I really appreciated that Jack made that first step. And then, you know, I was a little nervous to talk to him at first. And since then, it's been wonderful. It's really nice to chat to someone. And, you know, I've tried to be more open with people in general about it and not shy away from the topic. And I found it's really helped a lot of my friendships and relationships, just being open about it and, you know, connecting with other people that have gone through similar experiences. In the past year, I know of two other families that have gone through, I don't want to say worse situations, because it's hard to quantify terminations.
It's just different.
Different situations. And I've become really close with them. And it's been really nice to have that connection again through grief. Not that we talk about the grief and the situations, but, you know, it comes up, but then we talk about everything. And, you know, you have that special bond.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's nice to chat about life and have a friend in Avi, but then also know that if it does crop up, it is a completely safe space and we can, you know, share a mutual story almost. And anything that I discuss, I know that in some form Avi has experienced the same, and we can, you know, bond and share those moments together.
Sort of like being able to empathize with each other.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of resources for the moms, but there's not a lot of resources, not a lot of publicized resources for the fathers, for the partners. So I think I'm trying to combat that a little bit, you know, as much as possible in my circle of, you know, this is a safe space and we can talk about anything and, you know, we're always here to listen.
And I was just reflecting on the bit about social media, about, you know, how challenging it can be because you know what's coming up, but also like how helpful it can be because, you know, we're connected in a way that, you know, 5 years ago, we would never have done this, and we hadn't really found Zoom 5 years ago. And, you know, isn't it great that actually you two can support each other in a way that would be impossible if you didn't have this type of relatively simple technology?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all about kind of using it for your own advantage or what works for you, mm-hmm. and knowing when to kind of delete the Instagram, you know, for a period of time or whatever. Yeah. Well, it's I feel really touched about, I was getting a little bit sort of emotional there, just thinking about you guys connecting and having a bond, and yeah, that in a way that your babies have brought you together in this way. It's really, I don't know, there's something really lovely about that, you know, about how you've been able to make another friend and feel a deep connection with somebody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, Jack and I, when we do get together, we could talk for hours, but I usually have to take Louise out somewhere. And
I go make
Jack's gotta go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wondered if, just to finish off, you know, Jack, or maybe I'll go to Abby first. Abby, how do you kind of hold your son, wasn't it? Did you name him?
Yeah, we did. We named him Bali.
Bali. So how do you keep Bali with you in the family? Like, how is he sort of?
We have quite a few ways. Both George and I got tattoos because we got his footprint from the hospital, which was a gut punch when we opened that. So we both have a tattoo. We have little bees on a necklace for Bali, and we have his ashes in our living room. And Louise, our eldest, has a stuffed elephant with Bali written on it too. So, you know, he's always around. And anytime we see a butterfly, we equate him with butterflies. So it's, Louise gets really excited. Oh, it's my baby brother coming to say hi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's always with all of us in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jack, how have you been able to, you know, what's been your way?
Yeah. So we, very similar, actually. So I've also got a tattoo. My wife doesn't. She's been advised that she isn't allowed them. But I've got a tattoo of a chameleon, and it's because we decided that we wanted a teddy for our first child. They'd have a teddy, and I wanted to be a bit different. I didn't want just like a bear. I wanted something different. So we went to the shop. So this was post termination, and this chameleon was just sat there, and the chameleon just stuck out to me, and it just felt right. So we got the chameleon, which sits in our lounge, and I've got a tattoo of a chameleon. And we kind of didn't name the baby because it was quite early, but we kind of named the situation almost Lyra from a TV show. One of the main characters is called Lyra.
Yeah.
And then
it's Dark Materials.
It certainly is. Yeah. So we were watching that during that just before. And we just thought, if we have a girl, we hope that she's a little slice of Lyra, because she's just so independent and brilliant. And she's also a star constellation as well, which we can see above our house. So I've got the tattoo of the star constellation within a chameleon as well.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much, guys. It's been brilliant having you on.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Really, really appreciate it. And thank you, Nick, as well.
Yeah, no, thanks for inviting me. And thanks, Jack and Abby. It's been really interesting for me. And yeah, thank you for being so open.
Yeah.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Why not let us know what you thought of this episode or any of our others? Find us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR. To get all of our future episodes, make sure you subscribe. You can find us on most major podcasting platforms. You can even rate and review us on Apple, and this makes it easier for others who need us to find us. So that's all for this time. Thank you, and please take gentle care of yourselves.